Blog Talk Radio.
Don and Ron Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how's it going today?
Can't complain, Don. A good hot day here in the Twin Cities for our domestic and international audiences, if you will. Temperatures right around 90. Humidity feels like it's 120. I tell you, it's humid, hot out here. But, you know, hey, be blessed, be happy, because in about 4 months we'll be in tears. But anyways, what we got down, what's happening out there, man? Everybody's talking about the 50th anniversary, so what else is going on?
Yeah, the march. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you on your Lifetime Achievement Award awarded today to Mr. Ronald A. Edwards in honor of his dedication towards civil rights and social equity in the community. Was awarded today. You want us to talk about that for a minute?
Not really. I'm very appreciative and I'm humbled. I'm very humbled by any kind of award that recognizes one's long tenure, and in yours truly's case, over 50 years. You know, just appreciative of it. I well remember the March on Washington in 1963. I was a young 24-year-old African-American in the middle of the struggle at that time, and was considered, along with all 15 or 16 of my colleagues, to be persona non grata. And actually, we were not allowed to go with the buses here from Minnesota because we were considered to be black militants and communists back in those days.
Yeah.
And that's just a part of how things, you know, wheel and deal. In fact, I've seen some names of some folks who were talking in terms of the march and unity and all that, but they were all a part of a group that said, we can't let these young black communists. See, that's what we used to be in the late 50s and back through the 40s and 30s. If you stood up for civil and human rights, you weren't called a civil rights activist. You were called whatever label they wanted to put on you, a troublemaker, an agitator. But in the 1920s and 30s, they started calling young African-Americans communists and fellow travelers. And coming out of the 1950s, as I think the country began to realize there was a new group, a new culture of young Negroes, if you will, that were extremely aggressive. And I can well remember by 1960, we were being referred to as black militants. J. Edgar Hoover, you know, would paste the name on us. And so we weren't being called communists anymore as much as we were black militants. And so by 1963, some of the leadership in this city at that time, and some that are still around, they're in their 80s now, but would talk in terms of the troublemakers, the agitators, and et cetera. And so you found yourself persona non grata, if you will. And so I well remember as a group, like I said, this group of about 15 of us, young, real tough brothers, many of them unfortunately no longer with us, have moved on to the other side, if you will, of life. But I remember we thought we were booked on one of the buses. I mean, the white folks were paying for the buses. You know what I'm saying? And I remember being told by a number of individuals, a couple of them who were participating on the South Side today in these activities, who said that it would not be conducive and it would offend white persons who would be traveling or supporting the march to have people like us in there. And I'll just give a couple names so people can remember, because there's a couple folks on that South Side. These were some of their young relatives, Maurice and Clarence Burton, if you will, who are were uncles of Gary Cunningham. The late and legendary Arthur V. Wiley, one of the greatest minds, the brother of the legendary great medical pioneer, Dr. Herman Dillard, if you will. Cluis Moore Jr., if you will, the Davis brothers from out of North Minneapolis, you know, myself, Leroy Bogart, there was about 15, 17, 18 of us who were really activists, if you will. But still, the award takes nothing away from any of that, just appreciative and humbled, as we said, humbled to be the recipient of that plaque of appreciation for one's activity. So, you know, to whoever put it together, thank you.
Oh, yeah, we appreciate that. I mean, I know you appreciate that. That's really nice of them to do that. And I understand there was, not to shed a frown or the clouds over this, but I guess there was two different marches today, one in North Minneapolis and one in South Minneapolis.
Yeah, I'm told that some of the separation, unfortunately, came during discussions on the South side about who would be worthy of consideration, respect, and tribute, if you will. And so I don't know. It looked like there was some falling out with the respective committees, and so you wound up with two gatherings, one in North Minneapolis, one in South Minneapolis. Yeah.
I think that's
so sad.
Yeah, yeah. That must be the new unity in the community, you know. So,
I guess it has to be. You know, let me just say this also, and we're on this thing, you know, want to move the Republican thing. I just don't know that, you know, unfortunately what has happened in the way that our history has been raped, we have no historical institutions that can convey what these struggles were about going back to the turn of the last century. I just don't know that if you're 50 or younger, I don't think you have any real understanding or total appreciation about what we were going through. Don, let me just tell you, my friend, in the spring and early summer, as America prepared for this great march led by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and others, black people were being shot and killed on the streets of America, on the highways. Churches were being bombed. Little black children were being killed. Civil rights leaders, particularly the NAACP, the real NAACP, took a lot of hits. A lot of their leadership were beaten or shot and killed in different parts of the South. I mean, Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, Kentucky, Alabama, Florida. I mean, these were places where black people were living in terror, if you will, yet it was their courage that has allowed some, if you will, to enjoy a little better life 50 years later. But it's ironic, and I say this with no equivocation, because I was there, I was a part of that struggle. It's amazing that today, 50 years later, we're talking about the same thing we were talking about 50 years ago, and we're still being killed. I talk in terms of T.T. Franklin. I talk in terms of young African-American shot and killed by a Brooklyn Center police officer here two nights ago. Some are alleging that the young man was in handcuffs when he was shot. I mean, I assume there will be an investigation that will, quote-unquote, put the right spin. But I just have to say, Mr. Allen, to a young man yourself, and a conservative, if you will, but a young man who demands specificity and detail of history, et cetera, that it was so dangerous in this country in 1963. One cannot begin to have the kind of appreciation for the courage of Martin Luther King Jr., Byron Ruskin, A. Philip Randolph, a young John Lewis, and others, because, man, you were taking your life into your own hands. And then at one point, Lyndon Baines Johnson almost tried to call it off until he called together a group of more acceptable Negro leaders, Whitney Young, Roy Wilkins, who my family and I knew personally, if you will, James Farmer and others, and said, let's get a handle on this march. They said, we're not involved. LBJ said, I'm going to put you in place to be involved. And so there's a lot of rich history here, but there's a lot of history, Mr. Allen, that is consistent with the modus operandi of what is still going on in this country with respect to controlling the African-American leadership, the African-American agenda, the African-American decision-making. And so I just have to say that as one who lived in that period of time, the summer of 1963, man, it was not pleasant. And there were a lot of things done to undermine, to disrupt. LBJ and the government had thousands of federal troops standing by because they maintained that Negroes were going to burn down Washington, D.C., and et cetera, and et cetera. But it was a great, great event, if you will. And in many respects, probably redirected, if you will, reshaped and softened the acceptance by the Negro community of the civil rights agenda. And that was nonviolence, gradualism, if you will. Let's be respectful. And I think that was important because we were on the bubble of a tremendous explosion in this country in 1963. Okay?
Yes, yes. Wow. That's pretty deep history there. I hope people can appreciate that. I certainly do. Mr. Edwards, we have a problem at the state fair yesterday.
What?
At the Minnesota Republican Party of Minnesota, Minnesota GOP state fair booth. It seems that the Minnesota GOP chairman, Keith Downey, instructed volunteers to turn their T-shirts inside out if they were supporting David Gershon for Congress. You know that John Klein is the current congressman that represents.
And he's a Republican, isn't he? If I'm not
He's a Republican.
Yeah. Education committee?
Gershon's a Republican, too. They decided. The chair decided that, you know, these volunteers, these young 18 to 30-somethings, needed to turn their T-shirts inside out, that he was not having that in his booth to insult the incumbent.
What happened to freedom of expression in America?
Well, the Republican Party.
Even for white folks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, the Republican Party is going through some serious changes and it's for the elite right now, just the few elite, and they're singing to the choir. And based on just that alone, Mr. Edwards, this is why the Republicans are going to tank in 2014 and 2016, because of loss of spine. On August 16th, RNC Chairman Rince Priebus posted the message for his Facebook status. He goes, "It passed. Today, the RNC voted unanimously not to partner with CNN or NBC for the GOP 2016 primary debates.
Right.
They refused to halt the production of their Hillary Clinton films ahead of her likely 2016 candidacy."
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just saying that in reality, your Republicans must change their logo from the elephant to Wile E. Coyote because they just can't seem to get it right, you know? So.
Yeah, I saw your national chairman on a program last Sunday. I don't know if it's Face the Nation or no, it was because it was on CNN. He was pretty frantic, Don, that he used a word called boycott, which is kind of a no-no if you want to keep your nonprofit status and all that. But he said that the networks and et cetera that have reached out and are doing any positive pieces on our Miss Clinton or any other person who may challenge a Republican in 2016 will be boycotted, will be declared persona non grata, and everything will be done to do damage, I guess. And I was a little surprised by the vociferousness of your Republican chairman. Now, people start trying to make excuses for him when he went off the air. But, yeah, I saw that. I couldn't quite understand that, you know.
Yeah, it's just total nonsense and craziness as much as the T-shirt thing and as much as the list that they're giving to candidates that run for the GOP office in St. Paul or for the political positions. You know, they got bad data all the way around. And so,
now, is this the same Republican Party that went bankrupt?
They haven't actually filed bankrupt, but, Mr. Edwards, I think as we stand now, I think they're pretty much over $1 million still in debt and cannot physically, financially, or promotionally support any candidate. But what they will do is ride the coattails of, like, well, Michelle Bachmann's not running, and she wouldn't let them ride her coattails anyway. But they would ride the coattails of, like, a John Klein, Tom Emmer. They had the nerve to come out yesterday and say that Tom Emmer is the current endorsed candidate for mayor until there's a primary where if it changes, it will not change until that time unless someone takes down Tom Emmer.
Now,
as endorsed.
Emmer's a... For mayor in what enclave? What town? What town?
No. He ran for governor against Mark Dayton back in whenever. And so they're still considering Emmer. In 2010. They're still considering Emmer until the primary or until the endorsement process goes. They still consider him today the endorsed GOP candidate for governor, which is ridiculous.
Oh, you said mayor. You said mayor. Miss
I'm sorry.
Okay, you said mayor. That's why I thought, yeah, but mayor what? I mean, because doesn't Emmer live out in Chanhassen or somewhere?
Yeah, he lives somewhere.
Hutchinson? Yeah. Okay, all right. Wow. So how serious is this infighting, Don? I mean, this civil war. Oops, bad word, but this civil war within the Republican Party. I mean,
Well, here's what's going on. You have the libertarians, which are basically the Ron Paul followers, which is a younger set of of right-wing activists who really get out there and hammer the pavement and support people, you know, with cash, you know, whatever they need to do. Then you have the wing nuts in the Republican Party, which is a few a matter of fact, the St. Paul City Republicans had a march, Mr. Edwards, and there's a YouTube video of this out there. If you see it, you would laugh so hard because they're carrying this banner. They're carrying this banner that says there's more than one choice in St. Paul. And I'm just kind of paraphrasing what it says. And there's a bunch of old white guys with white tube socks pulled up to their ankles marching in this a parade during Rondo days. And, you know, how are we supposed to track, or how is the Republican Party supposed to track new individuals?
I have to play my liberal role now. I have to put my liberal hat on. But I'm a little puzzled about the age situation. Well, you know, I don't want to get into any age discrimination. Here's the reason I'm saying this. A young, bright, though he's a Canadian, he maintains he has dual citizenship, which is rather interesting, but he was born in Canada of Canadian and American parents named Cruz, who also uses in Texas his, you know, Spanish surname. But Mr. Cruz is a young white Hispanic Latino, if you will. Notice what I said. I'm not like any of the blacks out of places like Haiti or Cuba, you know, or dark Honduras, a place like that. Now, he's a young white Latino. Now, I'm not great. I have to disagree with you. There are a lot of young. I mean, I'm looking at a lot of young Tea Partiers in the Congress, particularly in the House of Representatives, man, full of fire and brimstone about, you know, we need to send them back. People need to be starved to death and et cetera. And something we really need to touch on for this program, they are leading the charge to begin articles of impeachment against President Barack Obama. See, people don't want us to talk about that, and I know you've been following that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you hear within your Republican colleagues about their mindset to begin to move towards the impeachment in 2014 of Barack Obama, which can easily be done? Now, that's not to throw him out of office because that has to be voted on in the Senate, but articles of impeachment rendered against him will tie him up for all of 2014 fighting for his presidency.
Yeah, and see, the thing is with that, locally here, Mr. Edwards, they don't have the time or the resources to even, all the thing they can do is support that by words. As far as the party goes, the elected officials here in town, the congressmen, they might have a little bit more oomph to like go in and make statements and things like that, but locally here, I mean, I get these emails from the Republican Party of Minnesota. I'm just so sick of them because it's not a good look to reach and swipe at Al Franken, Amy Klobuchar, President Barack Obama, or anyone else that has $1 million in the bank and you want, or in their campaign funds, and you want to put up these no-name individuals that want to run for governors and Senate congressmen. And we all know Franken or Klobuchar could just kind of fart some of their millions of dollars and wipe any one of the GOP candidates off the map. And so with that said, there's no change in public policy. There's no change in image. The brand is antiquated and in some cases racist.
Ah, but Don, I got to cut in again. I understand what you're trying to say for the conservative juggernaut, but this time last year, we were kind of saying the same thing about Michelle Bachmann and the way that she was calling Barack Obama a birther. In other words, he wasn't born in the United States. She called him a communist and everything else. Yet the voters in the 6th congressional district, which is just north of us, up around St. Cloud and back through there, you know, unanimously returned her to represent them. So I'm just kind of wondering, maybe we'll get a call from someplace like Foley, Minnesota, or St. Cloud, or Becker. I'd like to know what the feeling is in the 6th congressional district on the impeachment of President Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah. And the phone lines are open, and that number is 347.
Yeah, give that number out, Don. Give that number. I'm getting a little feedback on my voice. I can hear myself echoing back. But give that phone number. I'd like to hear some questions about the impeachment.
Yeah, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Phone lines are wide open.
Let's talk a little bit about the impeachment, Don. You got to remember now, you guys.
Us guys.
I love this portion. You guys control the House. We control, us liberals, if you will, control the Senate by maybe 5 or 6 votes, and not a lot, and particularly with some elections coming up in 2014. I mean, have you given any thought to how serious this impeachment thing can become?
Well, I know that some of the black Republicans called for Obama impeachment. This is as late as Friday, August 16th. The Florida-based organization of black Republicans is calling for Barack Obama's impeachment, releasing articles that charge him with erroneous acts of nepotism and constitutes high crimes and misdemeanors. And this is out of Florida. And so, I mean, I've been watching things like that, and the Florida Watch group said there are 10 articles, including obstruction of an investigation into Benghazi, Libya, murder of 4 Americans, the scandal of administration running guns, drug ring lords in Mexico, and Internal Revenue Service campaign to obstruct operations of conservative and Christian organizations. So, I mean, they have a list of stuff. I mean, I don't know how it's going to fly, but, I mean, the black Republicans in Florida are on board for some reason. So,
well, it can fly because the way that our, beloved Constitution is written, it's a very small number of members of the House can bring forward articles of impeachment. And, the president, the Democrats will have to defend him in the Congress. And let me tell you, if I was a Republican strategist, 2014 would be the optional year to make this kind of move, because what we would basically do is deny the president any latitude to get anything done, because he would have to – all his energy would be tied up in fighting the impeachment.
And, Mr. Edwards, we have a call.
Get the call. Okay.
Hi, you're live on the air? Yes, you're
live,
on
the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. So you were talking about the president. Have you already talked about the Viking Stadium and that debacle?
We're getting there in about 5 minutes, because that's pretty deep, and we'll probably use the rest of the show to break that down for you.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be really listening, because, I mean, this is really, I don't know why this wasn't checked out ahead of time. We're so far into this thing now, and it looks like the taxpayers are on the hook. And it's like you guys have been saying all along, I mean, the jobs, the infrastructure, doing something for the community, this stadium, it's like it's a one-sided deal, only for the Wilfs, not the community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me do this. We'll at 3:30, we're going to segue into the stadium. I'll be playing it out. Feel free to get online, call us back, and any questions. Appreciate it. Call me back.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, the Viking Stadium, in fact, on that one, there probably should be some impeachment, at the end of the day, what a disaster it is. But on this question of the impeachment of the president, Don, I think you would agree now. You read the Constitution and the articles and et cetera. I mean, they could tie this legislative session, or the 2014 session, up for the entire year with the trial of the president for articles of impeachment.
Yes. Oh, yeah, the whole year. There's some pretty sharp criticism from this is an African American or Black American, whatever you choose, based show, but there is some serious criticism on President Obama from African Americans on both liberal and conservative sides.
Isn't that something?
And let me read this here real quick, Mr. Edwards.
Sure,
Don.
I know you just pulled it up. Go ahead. Let's get it.
This is, it's about time the blacks in America wake up. Nothing is free. Someone has to pay for it. Old Democrats just want to keep the blacks down on the government handouts in exchange for their votes. I will say this cost of a hell is of a lot more than votes than to raise a family. Obama must go, impeach now. That is from a African-American gentleman in Florida.
And so I'm
looking at this, and I'm going like, wow. And
down there where Representative West lasted for one term.
Yes. exactly.
Yeah, remember West. Yeah, you guys remember him. He was going to be the new bright black star of Amos and Andy. But anyways, go ahead, man. But that's a heck of a statement. That's an interesting statement. So because you're talking about, actually, the articles talk in terms of crimes and high crimes and treason. See, you're talking in terms of accusing the president of treason. Now, you and I have talked about it on this program over the last 7 or 8 months. One of the reasons I think Hillary Clinton got the hell on out of there to allegedly concentrate on her presidential bid in 2016 is that there's two things, Fast and Furious, which the Republicans, yeah, I know you guys haven't forgot about Fast and Furious, okay, because you almost had Eric Holder going out the door. But Fast and Furious and Benghazi are two specific emotional issues amongst the extreme right that would give appropriate justification for the managers, because what you do, you appoint managers to present the case and to deal with the allegations and contentions against the president. And I just think, see, I'm afraid, Don, there are enough votes in the House of Representatives, unless some people get some Republicans accept some high moral ground. I just don't think that it's in the Congress. I mean, in the Senate. I think they would fall 7, 8, 9 votes short. But man, they could move the articles of impeachment against President Barack Obama, man, and we could see our first African American president impeached in office.
Yeah, and you know, I want to clarify something, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, some of our people know more about Kim Kardashian and Kanye West than this process. The Congress first needs to impeach Obama, and I think the Congress does not want to proceed until they have votes in the Senate for the conviction. Now, this is the same thing that happened with Bill Clinton, the Bill Clinton impeachment, when Democrats said it voted not to convict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think this time they're just sitting back in the cut, and that's kind of how the process works for you Kanye West, Kim Kardashian fans. So we'll leave it at that.
By the way, what does Kardashian and them have to do with impeachment?
Oh, no, I'm just saying that in the United States, they don't have anything to do with the impeachment, but some of our people know more about the entertainment world than they know about the politics that's governing
them. Where you're going, Mr. Allen,
yes,
I apologize.
Thank you. No problem.
Yeah, they can tell you more about the latest hip-hop song calling black women bees than they know about the impeachment of their president.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent point, man. Because I just don't know that many black folk have really paid any attention to the slick conversations that have been put out by a multiplicity of right-wing talk show hosts, tacticians, and strategists. And Cruz has been clearly identified. The junior senator out of Texas has clearly been identified as the man who will carry that. And in the last couple of days, he's just gone berserk talking in terms of treason and high crimes and et cetera. And I still maintain Fast and Furious and Benghazi will be two of the specific areas in question, okay? And the tone is set, man. So, you know, hopefully people are paying attention to it. And if you don't know and understand what impeachment means, go get you a book on government, okay? And then take a look at the procedure that is used in the House of Representatives and then in the Senate when you talk in terms of receiving the articles and voting to either acquit or find the President of the United States guilty of high crimes. Woo! Mm-hmm. You know, so 2014 would be an excellent time to do it, Mr. Allen. I think you as a conservative, I as a liberal would agree, because there would be no legislative action. All kinds of legislation would fall dormant. People would be out of work. Bills dealing with health care and et cetera would not be acted on, because this Congress would be exhausted with this impeachment issue. Now, for those that remember the 1990s when they moved, and you got to remember, man, they moved to impeach Bill Clinton because he lied about getting some sex in the pantry at the White House.
Monica Lewinsky.
Now, you got to understand, if they had moved to impeach him for allegedly perjury in that he did not tell, you know, he's looking over his shoulder at Hillary, okay, if they can impeach Bill Clinton for something as minor and as frivolous as that, do you know what they'll do when they talk about that this president allowed 4 white American heroes in Benghazi to be killed, including the American ambassador?
Mm-hmm. That's going to get ugly.
Yeah,
real ugly.
Yeah. So, anyways, okay, well, you know, we already got a, apparently we got a number of listeners out there.
Yeah,
so
we
let's
have
go ahead and move
call.
On to
we have
oh, I'm
call.
Sorry, Don, sure. Let's get the call. Get the call.
Hello, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, sir. Or ma'am, whoever
he's
it is.
In box. He's in box.
Hi,
I think that was our previous caller.
Oh, are
hi, my
you,
name
no,
is...
No, this, what, this is a new caller. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name is Jim Carson. Don invited me to call on Facebook, and so I changed my... I said no, but I changed my mind. So, Don, you want to throw down?
Well, we had talked about that about 5 minutes ago, the T-shirt incident at the state fair and the shape of the Republican Party. And if you've been listening at any time soon, we just got, I mean, any time in the last 5 minutes, we just broke down the impeachment process and kind of what the right is working kind of against Obama and what they're doing. And I guess my point with you on Facebook is that you had put on there a comment, and I don't want to bring this across, but this, for entertainment purposes, I'm going to go ahead and tell people that I was a snitch because I talked about the Minnesota GOP, the list that were handed out to people, and how bullshit it was. And
I
so
didn't
with
call
that,
you a snitch.
Well, I think you wrote it down there on, you said, Don Allen, you're a snitch. I'm looking right at it. And so with that said, Mr.
I
Carlson.
Use the word, I don't believe I used the word snitch. Oh,
well, whatever
word. Stitch. I said
well,
stitch. Maybe the spell correction changed it.
Okay.
I said
okay. And anyway, what I'm saying here is that the Republican Party in Minnesota needs a public policy an image, a branding change, and its antiquated tent parties has to stop, period. So do you have any comments to that?
Yeah, you're
I mean,
talking,
what was the purpose
talking
of,
in a vacuum here.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. What is the purpose of your call? I mean, you're calling to express a concern about what?
Don asked me to call in to talk about this, and I'm calling in to talk about it.
Okay, well, I just said what I had to say, what you had to say.
And then, Don, I'm getting messages. We got some people on hold that can't say they can't get through.
Okay,
so we
yeah,
need to
yeah.
make sure we're taking. But go ahead, sir. So what is your concern?
Well, my concern is that, you know, Don is throwing out a lot of things about how he was treated in running for the state party chair. And the fact is that he was not mistreated. I mean,
Now, is white privilege telling you, who's telling you that? Is that factual? Is that white privilege?
I don't even know what you mean by white privilege.
Let me ask you a question, sir. First of all, were you a delegate to the state convention?
Yes.
You were a delegate from what district? Quickly. Now, come on, you better remember the district. I'm talking about the confab in which Mr. Allen ran as a candidate. Which legislative district were you from?
4th Congressional District.
Okay, and did you participate in the vote, and did you examine Mr. Allen's credentials?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and you reached an assumption as it pertains to his qualifications, correct?
Yes, I did.
And the democratic process, which we all are allegedly a part of, allowed you that luxury. Are you saying that Mr. Allen does not have the luxury of expressing his opinion on how he was treated? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying he's wrong in his description.
Oh, he's
I'm not
wrong.
Saying he
okay.
is every...
he's wrong. Okay. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And how was he wrong?
Well, he's making claims that I'm saying are not true. He's saying that he received bad list. There were 6 good names out of 500 is what he quotes in his article. That's BS. If he, you know, it. I got his emails for a week or two before the vote. Other candidates have been working for months to
let me ask you a question, Mr. Carlson, again. It's been, if I'm not mistaken, it's been 3 months ago that you had the convention. Did you express these concerns to Mr. Allen prior to today's program?
Absolutely. I talked with him at the state central meeting. It's not a convention technically; it's a meeting. But I expressed him at the convention or at the meeting that he hadn't spent enough time talking to delegates. We had a conversation
you know
in the back of the room.
How did you know that? You were told that, or you saw that, you observed that, or how did you reach that conclusion?
because I'm as the chair of the 4th Congressional District.
Oh, there we go. You're the, chair
yeah.
of, you're the chair of the 4th District Convention. Yeah, okay, all right.
Okay.
So you can't have a vested interest, right?
I couldn't have cared less who won.
Oh, come on now, sir. Come on now.
Yeah.
You're the chair. You're the chair of the 4th District. You have a vested interest to protect the best interests of the party. Come on now. Come on. Be fair with yourself.
Of course. That's one of the... I'm protecting the best interests of the Republican Party, of course. What else would I do?
Let me ask you a question as it pertains to your candor and et cetera. How do you feel about your Republican colleagues in the legislature voting for this stadium?
I thought it was foolish, and I told my legislators at the time that they should vote against it. At that time, I lived in the old 53, Senate District 53. My senator voted against it, and my representative voted for it.
And who are those individuals? Let's name them. Let's name who the office holders were. Who was it?
Chamberlain and McFarland.
Is that right? And now, obviously, you moved out of 53. Are you still in the 4th District?
No, the district was redistricted such that...
Oh, you were redistricted out? So where do you live? Up towards North St. Paul, that area?
Yeah, a little north. I live in the south end of White
Bear. You're now in the 6th Congressional District?
No, I'm in the 4th Congressional District, but I'm in a different legislative district.
Oh, a different legislative district. Okay. All right, then. Okay. Anything else as it pertains to your observation? Mr. Allen invited you to express your concerns, observations, and criticism of his analysis and observations. Anything else that you have? And then, Mr. Allen is certainly free to...
If you want to run for a high party office, it takes a lot of time. It takes hundreds or even thousands of phone calls to talk to people to get them to get your vote. And
hey,
Mr. Allen didn't put the effort in.
Wait.
Okay.
I gotta stop you right there, okay? And this is going to be the end of it because I'm going to disconnect you afterwards because this is what happened. The list that I received from the Minnesota GOP state party were bogus, number one. Number two, the day before the convention, they said that each one of us had to get 25 names of delegates. Now, why didn't they tell us that 3 months ago, before that date? You know, they told us.
Don, you didn't run for 3 months.
I didn't.
Well, if you want to win, you're going to have to run for several months to get the votes together.
Yeah, I'm going to need a facelift too if I want to win. Thanks for your call, James.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, sorry about that.
Well, here's the thing I'm trying to figure out. Is there some provision in the GOP Constitution that says that you must go through a certain period and timeline in order to be considered worthy to be a candidate? I mean, he kept saying something about, I think he wanted to say that you only started running 3 months before the election, but if I remember correctly, the previous chairman was Mr. Sutton, if I'm not mistaken. Wasn't he ousted for impropriety, financial impropriety?
Yeah, that was a couple
wasn't that
years
the reason?
Ago.
Wasn't that the reason, Mr. Allen? There was a vacancy.
No, there. Pat Shortridge took over for Tony Sutton, was, and so he was there, and Kelly Fenton is the deputy chair, and.
Okay.
So those two kind of shenagled around for a couple of years, and it got to the point where it was time to just elect new people. And so, of course, Pat Shortridge did not run. Kelly Fenton did run, and she won, unfortunately. And Keith Downey, who won as chair, he won, I didn't ask any of the delegates or anybody in the Republican Party for a nickel. I mean, some of these guys actively collected money like they were on a political campaign trail. And I didn't think that was appropriate, number one, nor did I think that was necessary. And so with that said, the young guys up at the Minnesota GOP, I could never get an audience with the executive director or the chairman at the time, Shortridge, or the deputy chair. And so the list they were sending me, Mr. Harris, was just trash. But that's enough about that. We have two more people on hold.
Let's get those calls that we got holding there because people are texting me saying they've been put on hold. Let's get them in. Let's get the calls in. My phone lines are wide open. Go right in.
You're live on the air. Go ahead. Ms. Quibbin?
Is it my turn yet?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Ron. This is Lisa Clemens. How are you?
Fine, Ms. Clemens. How are you doing?
I'm good. I had the honor today. I went to the 50th anniversary march for Martin Luther King's March on Washington. And I was honored to walk up on the stage and pick up an award that was given to you.
I understand that from some Texas, and I'm deeply indebted, and I'm certainly humbled by the award. I appreciate you accepting on my behalf. You know, it's so rare for a old civil rights veteran of the real school to get anything, so I appreciate it. And I understand
can I
it's
read
been,
it to
it's,
you?
Oh, certainly. Go right ahead.
It says Lifetime Achievement Award presented to Ron Edwards in honor of your dedication towards civil rights and social equality in the community, dated August 24th, 2013. And I am humbled to be holding it in my hands and can't wait to give it to you.
All right, Ms. Clemens, thank you, and I appreciate it. And to the donors, if you will, my appreciation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye, bye-bye.
And our next caller.
An award. Okay, yes, what's the other caller? We got another caller.
Yes, hello, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
I'm just in the queue.
Okay.
Oh, just in
go.
The queue. Oh, okay.
Okay, that's right where he is in the
all
queue.
All right.
Okay.
Look, well, people are asking about the thing with the Don, what's your take on what? My God, they were ugly to each other, I'm told, down there yesterday morning in the Halsey Hall room at the Metrodome Stadium. They're talking
yeah.
real. What has happened here?
Well, Mr. Edwards, I have a huge problem with this from the beginning to the end, as I know that you do, because, I mean, everything that you predicted over a year ago is coming to fruition, you know? And it's like you're 5 for 5 on all your predictions about what was happening. One of the things that I need to start with, Mr. Edwards, and I have to examine you on some of these things, but I need to let our listeners know that last month the Somali community was promised jobs in August on the People's Stadium, and those of us with a reasonable amount of sense know that the Vikings are going to play their season in there, and there's going to be no construction.
No, whatsoever.
None. And as you pointed out in the production meeting, that could not happen because OSHA would come in and shut everybody down because of the traffic for the football game. Just couldn't
That's
happen.
Right.
So, I mean, I have a problem because, you know, weak people denote weak leadership, and the two complement each other, which is a sad commentary for black people and people who know nothing about concerning their past or anything like that. And so we're listening to these people that don't represent the Somali community, let alone the black community, kind of leading these people on. And our apologies to the Somali community. But, Mr. Edwards, there was two distinct email messages sent out yesterday, on Friday, August 23rd, which started a war with the, as far as this is my opinion, with the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority and the Vikings. Now, the MSFA statement regarding updated construction schedule and need to move ahead with negotiation was written like a push to try to get Mr. Wolf and the Vikings to come to the table. This is the statement, if I may, by the facility chair, Michelle Kelm-Hagelin. It reads, the MSFA and the Minnesota Vikings have been working towards the development of a construction of a new Minnesota multi-purpose stadium. We have been on budget and on schedule up to this point. Today, the MSFA board had a report from the Hames Company, the MSFA construction consultants, on the detail of an updated construction schedule. The project can meet the July 2016 schedule if the MSFA and the Vikings finalize negotiations on the use agreement, UA, and the development agreement, DA, by September 15th. Last week, the team canceled meetings on those two agreements, and yesterday notified the MSFA that they will not resume negotiations on these two critically important agreements until our additional due diligence into the New Jersey ruling regarding Mr. Wolf is complete. Well, that's the first, Mr. Edwards, that's the first memo.
And that was at 11:28 a.m. yesterday, about an hour and a half after the meeting ended. Go ahead. And the second one that you have?
The second one here, it was 5:05 p.m. Yesterday, August 23rd. It's titled Statement from Peter Carter, Counsel to the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority about Minnesota Vikings comment on due diligence. Now,
by the way, Mr. Carter is employed by Dorsey Whitney. But go ahead.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It says, Peter Carter, the Dorsey and Whitney attorney heading the due diligence investigation, has released this statement. Okay. I'm trying not to laugh, but I'm trying to be professional here. There have been some statements made about the Vikings to the press today regarding MSFA's financial due diligence that are simply not true, and the MSFA would like to set the record straight. The Vikings have stated that they have provided the MSFA with detailed financial information in our due diligence review. We have received no such information. The MSFA, through our attorneys, have made multiple requests for more cooperation from the Wilfs. To date, they have refused to provide us with any personal financial information that our advisors need to obtain comfort that the New Jersey court case will not result in impact their ability to meet their financial obligations. We look forward to receiving the financial information from the Wilfs so that we can conduct our due diligence. The people of Minnesota deserve to know that the team can finance their part of the stadium construction budget without delay. In a meeting with U.S. Bank that took place with Mr. Bagley, was not present. Mr. Bagley was not present, and the unequivocal reassurance
Bagley. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Was not present, uh-huh. And the unequivocal reassurance he refers to was never provided. The Wolf said requires to sign a confidentiality agreement that precludes our advisors from discussing what was said. Mr. Edwards, this is all out war.
Let's go back with respect to both of the so-called press releases. Number one, the one at 11:28 in the morning, which was about 2 hours after the contentious board meeting had ended, was a bunch of fluff, okay? Mm-hmm. What happened, though, is that the Sports Facility Authority did not realize the damage that had been done when Les Bagley said, well, we're cooperating, but, we don't intend to sit at the table with people who question our integrity, our professionalism, and our business practices, okay? Because you're talking about a lawsuit that's 21 years old, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That lawsuit was filed 21 years ago, and so, that probably were some practices and et cetera. But people need to go to the website of the Newark Star-Ledger, the majority paper there, the big white paper in Newark, and take a look at some of the investigative reporting that's been done by that newspaper, including transcripts and et cetera of the most recent trial, where the judge made the ruling and a $50 million assessment and legal costs. Okay, that was the 11:28 was a press release that reflected the fact that they were trying to do damage control. Now,
yes,
when Dorsey Whitney, who has been brought in, and by the way, I have to say this to you, Mr. Allen, there's a little bit of anti-Semitism also at play here, okay?
Okay.
And it's been reflected in an editorial in the Minneapolis Star Tribune a week and a half ago, which I saw some language that my research indicates that has not been present in a Minneapolis newspaper since the mid-1930s, when this city was in the midst of some strong anti-Semitism. Now, some of what we're seeing is a backlash from some of the Jewish owners in the NFL against what happened to a very beloved and dear man by the name of Max Winters, who basically had the Viking franchise pulled out from under him in a pretty raw series of deals. That's number one. People need to say that, be upfront about the fact that anti-Semitism is at play here in Minnesota, and much of it is being directed towards Ziggy Wilf and his family. And by the way, the Wilf family are Holocaust survivors. Now, nobody wants to get into that because the NFL is very, very sensitive about this kind of bias. But that's an undercurrent. And by the way, as a part of that, for any caller that wants to ask us about it, these folks actually think that they can actually force, through intimidation, criticism, coercion, et cetera, that they can force Ziggy Wilf to sell this team to Minnesota investors who haven't put a dime in, okay, as it pertains to the stadium and the fight for the stadium and et cetera. So you want to keep that in mind. Now, that takes us to Mr. Carter and Dorsey Whitney, which had no problem playing a role in this anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. First of all, they're not telling the truth, because the Wilfs began to indicate to the Sports Facility Authority and their lawyers over 2.5 weeks ago when the New Jersey story broke that they didn't quite like the way that they were being questioned and examined. Now, when the announcement was made as an outgrowth of Governor Mark Dayton's misrepresentation, because the governor and Michelle and the rest of them know they're not telling the truth when they say they didn't know anything about the 21-year lawsuit. The Star Tribune knows a little bit better because in 2011, the Star Tribune did an article on the lawsuit. Okay?
Yes.
In 2011, yes. The Star Tribune did an article on the lawsuit. All right? Now, the governor, for whatever reason, chose to make it appear that they had been blindsided doing negotiations with the Wilf family in the early part of 2012 and through 2012 and et cetera. That's just not true. They knew, everybody that was supposed to know knew about the lawsuit. Okay, I repeat it. In 2011, the Minneapolis Star Tribune did a story on the lawsuit. Now, there's an additional piece in there in that 505 email that is also not true. Actually, the only persons that have put up any money per se is the Vikings. They put $50 million in the bank in an account in July of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was already $24 million in that account as an outgrowth of a legislative demand, request, and directive. The proper word is probably legislative directive. That $24 million be transferred from the old ballpark authority, which was responsible for the construction of the Twins Field. $24 million was shifted to the sports facilities account. The Vikings were required last July, under color of law, to put up $50 million. And, in fact, they needed that $50 because they needed to pay the architect, HKS of Dallas, Texas, who, by the way, is going to receive $50 million for designing this stadium, okay?
Yes.
In the article in this morning's paper, Michelle made a terrible mistake and said we've only spent $10.1 million. That's absolutely untrue. On these programs last year, Mr. Allen, I shared with our audience payouts that were being made in June, July, August, and September that are in excess of $35 million. I don't know what these folks are talking about. They're spending these people's money like it's hot molten lava. Now, let me tell you another piece that they got themselves in trouble. There are $348 million in tax, get this now, tax-supported bonds that must be sold in, so that the state of Minnesota can pay their portion. I don't know what the city of Minneapolis is going to do to pay their portion of initially $150 million and then an additional $159 million. See, the city's actual total is going to be $309 million before the stadium is to be opened and certified as NFL-ready on July 1, 2016, all right? People are not telling the truth, Mr. Allen, all right? Now, you've got another situation, and we're just going to lay it out. Hopefully, people, any questions, we are prepared to answer it. There's a real problem because by mid-November, there must be money in the construction account. It's called a construction trust account. The Vikings is $50,000 is already in there. There must be another additional $50,000 from the state and, to some degree, the city. Now, they have not been able to assign the bonds to be sold or to be bid on, okay? Those bonds are the bonds that the state must sell to raise the $348 million, or they're going to have to go into the general fund and take away the little children's education money, health care money, and et cetera. Okay, like I said before, I don't know what the city of Minneapolis is going to do. For those that have been longtime listeners, 2 months ago we had a couple of candidates for mayor on this program. We asked them, including Gary Schiff, about how you're going to finance the stadium, and everybody was a little bit tenuous, all right? Now, the money, good faith money, for the purchase of the steel, which, and you got it, you're going to have a tremendous and enormous amount of steel in order to prop this stadium up. Okay? And so that must be in place. The order must be made by mid-November. Okay? Steel company is not going to commit itself to forge, molt, or do anything else with any kind of steel until there's some, no matter how good your credit seems to be. Now, the NFL stands behind the Wilfs. The NFL is a $1 billion corporation, okay? So the wills are protected in that regard, and the wills are negotiating as we speak with a couple of banks outside of Minnesota, by the way. That's one of the reasons why the confidentiality agreement, Mr. Allen, is of such great interest, okay? Because the wills, after the way that they had been handled when they tried to go to Anoka, and then when they tried to go to Arden Hills, the way that information was leaked that undermined their business practices, they don't have a lot of confidence about lending institutions here in the state of Minnesota. So they've been negotiating with banks in New Jersey and California and Illinois, okay? So we're just not getting a honest depiction and the kind of clairvoyance that, that the taxpayers and the citizens of the state of Minnesota deserve. Now, Ziggy Wolf is ticked off. Now, you and I have talked about this in productions. Contrary to what these people are not saying, the Vikings are right at the abyss of being able to walk away from this deal, and there's nothing the state of Minnesota can do.
Not a darn thing.
We're within 90 days, and I'll give you another piece. Under the NFL Constitution, the Vikings in February of next year can make a declaration of their intent to move after the 2014 season.
Whoa.
There's nothing anybody can do about it. The law, the Constitution of the NFL indicates that they, if they are going to move the team, that they must make the declaration in February of that calendar year. Okay? No one's talking about it, huh? There are two facilities ready to receive the Vikings. One in Imperial, California, which is out there where the real rich folk and the Koch brothers live, Desert Springs and Desert Palms and all that. And then there is the remodeled Coliseum in downtown L.A. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ziggy and his investors have some sites to go to.
Yes, they do.
And if you continue to push, now here's my take on this, that sometime in the next 30 days, our Commissioner Goodell will come here to Minneapolis, as he did in January of 2012 when he told them, either you give the Vikings a stadium or they are free to leave. Well, they're still free to leave because what happened yesterday, Mr. Allen, the documents that that needed to be signed to lock them in, Ziggy Wolf is no fool, okay? Irrespective of what his business practices have been, his business practices, get this one, are no different than Tom Petters. Oops. Because not everybody went to jail when Tom Petters went to jail, okay? Let me put it to you like that. There were some folks that should have went to jail with Tom Petters, okay? So Ziggy Wolf's practices are no different than some people who are around the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission whose practices and business conduct and attitude is exactly the same, okay? I think we used to say in the old days it's like the kettle calling the pot black.
Yes, I hate to use that
term, and that, you know, what it means. So these are some of the backgrounds at this very hour. These folks have a crisis, Mr. Allen. Now, as they said, and they told the Somalis and all the rest of them yesterday, we're not even here to talk about no equity, okay? We're talking about white folks' money, okay?
Yeah.
We're talking about over $1 billion. Let me throw one additional piece in there that the Star Tribune needs to talk about. There is a reason, and the authority didn't recognize it until last week when they had a meeting at U.S. Bank and Lester Bagley and the Vikings representative didn't show up. The Vikings 7 months ago were saying, look, we, as is articulated in the legislation of last year, we will take on the responsibility of covering the cost of the construction in return that we manage everything that the construction manager does, and that's Mortensen, by the way. Well, people were stalling on that. Well, what's happened now, the Vikings have said, no, we're not interested. Because if there's cost overruns and the Vikings do not take on that responsibility, Mr. Allen, the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota have to take on that responsibility. And by the way, the projected cost overruns, as we've been saying for a year and a half, based on very significant and scientific analysis, is $248 million. So you're talking about a project that will peter out at about $1.25 billion. Cost overrun, $248 million. Okay? So that's why they're concerned about the schedule. Oh, by the way, for Mortensen, the language in the construction contract is that if the stadium is not ready by July 1 and for the first exhibition game, which will be late July, early August, that Mortensen will have to pay $5 million in penalties for each game that the stadium is not NFL ready. When I say NFL ready, Mr. Allen, the NFL comes in, they bring in their experts, they go over the entire stadium, everything from the boiler room to the locker room to the field to the press room to the executive boxes. It must be NFL certified. If the stadium is not NFL certified, the Mortensen construction will go broke pretty quick because they will have to pay a $5 million penalty each time the Vikings stadium is not ready. But my position, Mr. Allen, I don't think that we're ever going to see the Minnesota Vikings in the People's Stadium.
No, no, not at all. But Mr. Edwards, what concerns me here, since you've run that down perfectly for us, is what is Peter Carter saying when he says the people of Minnesota deserve to know that the team can finance their part of the stadium construction budget without delay, and the city of Minneapolis and others don't have their money?
Because Dorsey Whitney is being disingenuous and dishonest.
Okay.
I repeat again what I said about 11 minutes ago. The Vikings and / the NFL are the only ones that have put down any money. The Vikings have put $50 million of their money. How they got it is really nobody's business. As long as what, Mr. Allen, the check cleared?
The check
in July
the
of last year?
Yes.
That's all that's important. No one
wow.
has, other than the $24 million that was transferred, and how much does it cost to transfer from one account to another when you're doing business with the same bank, U.S. Bank, okay?
Oh, nothing. They're glad to help their customers. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that this time last year, and in fact, we were saying it on this program, for anybody that wants to go back on demand and listen to the programs at this same corresponding date last year, I was pointing out to our listening audience that this Sports Facility Authority had started out in grand style. They had $74 million to play with. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go and look at some of the contracts that they signed last summer, where they were taking care of small companies and people who, you know, were a part of, quote-unquote, the big political picture, both Republican and Democrat, okay, they were spending money like it was water. Now, during the last legislative session, just a couple months ago, there was an attempt to say to the Wilts that you need to come up with another $200 million. The reason they said that, the Wilts had just gotten, as was acceptable under the NFL Constitution, the Wolves had just taken out a loan of $200 million with the NFL. The NFL has a slush fund
mm-hmm.
where when you have teams that are either going to upgrade their stadiums or build new stadiums, it's a big slush fund that you can reach into.
Uh-oh.
So while they were at the NFL conference this past winter in Phoenix, Arizona, the NFL approved a $200 million loan to the Vikings. All right?
Wow.
The Vikings have already put $50 million of their own in there. They now need about another $177 million. That shouldn't be any problem when you talk in terms of what they're going to put up as collateral.
Yeah, exactly.
Because in a situation like that, the NFL, the $1 billion corporation, is going to stand behind them. You know,
yeah.
the NFL can go to Chase.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, can go to Chase Manhattan or Wells Fargo in San Francisco and get $200 million just like that, okay? I have to say, no matter how I may not like what the Vikings did or Ziggy and et cetera, though, as I said before, that was a 21-year lawsuit. That lawsuit was filed 21 years ago.
Wow,
okay?
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, only the Vikings have put any monies into the coffers.
And so these other people are just sitting around and complaining. And now that I'm looking at these press releases, you know, I think they pissed Mr. Wolf and the Vikings off enough where we might not see, like you said, the People's Stadium or a Vikings game in 2016.
14. Yeah.
2014. That's right. Next year. And so
I repeat again what I said for our listening audience across the country, around the world, that in February of 2014, just about 6 months down the road, the Vikings will have the opportunity under the NFL Constitution to say, we are serving notice of our intent to to relocate our franchise. And they'll do just like the folks did when they took the then Baltimore Colts out of Baltimore and took them to Indianapolis in the middle of the night.
Like a thief in the night.
Yeah.
Now Mr. Edwards, since you are the historian on this, this is kind of the same process that the beloved Minnesota North Stars went through back in the day, or something to that effect.
It is a carbon copy, and I'm surprised that the Star Tribune has not gone more in depth with those who don't want to remember. The Minnesota North Stars were owned by a man named Norm Green. Norm Green was a business partner of the Kamazian brothers out of Edmonton, Canada, who built MOA, the big super mall out there. Norm Green had been promised a piece of the action across the highway, across the street. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a double cross. They double crossed him. They wouldn't allow him, the city of Bloomington and others would not allow him to purchase that property. He was taking some losses. It was the same thing that was promised to Ziggy Wolf. And what Norm Green did, he consulted with the league, and he took the team out of here to Dallas.
Yeah.
He stayed there for about 4 years, made his money back, went back up to Edmonton, Canada, and is now a successful developer up there.
Wow.
Norm Green, Minnesota North Stars, same situation. Okay? Mr. Allen, I need you to take over. I need to redial here in my studio. We're running low on power. We have to make a power shift. Why don't you see if we got any calls?
Okay. Our studio number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-246-3904. While Mr. Edwards switches lines in the other studio for me here, we're going to be sitting here and talking for a moment. One thing I'd like to bring up while we're waiting for Mr. Edwards to come back is, I know a lot of you have heard about the MSure, this new healthcare coverage and that Minnesota is rolling out. And there's been some questions about who the advertising agency or what the advertising agency for MSure is doing. And did they disregard minority media? In a press release they sent out, they says, you know, we've done our creative work, and it's BBDO Proximity Executive Creative Director Brian Cronin, and then we've done WCCO TV, Carrie 11 TV, KSTP TV, Fox 9 News, the Star Tribune, the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and NPR. But it seems like they have not done due diligence with the African American or Hispanic Asian community.
Now, back with you. Go right ahead, sir.
And so with that said, you know, MSure is going to have some problems with this campaign by ignoring minority ethnic media here for healthcare in Minnesota. And that's one of the main complaints of the Somali community, that the Minnesota Department of Health is not paying attention to them. And then with this new MSure insurance, the advertising agency did this old Jim Crow media buy and decided that, you know, the minority ethnic media is not going to handle this, that we can get the word out through our St. Paul Pioneer Press, the public radio, and Star and Tribune. And they should know better, that it's a new day, a new time, and a lot of people aren't even concerned with those entities. So I just like to put that out there and let people know what's going on. And as we continue our due diligence and watchdog status here on the Ron and Don Show, we have to make sure that we get the news out. Mr. Edwards, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. And again, the phone lines are open, and any questions, any examination anyone wants to conduct as it pertains to this Viking stadium situation. Don, I cannot overemphasize how critical and what a critical point we are at right now with respect to this entire fiasco. As I said just a couple minutes before, maybe didn't elaborate enough, I'm looking for a request to the commissioner to come into Minnesota and at least go through the motions of trying to bring the parties back to the table. Because here's the thing. For those people out there with the degrees in accounting and et cetera, a forensic audit is a son of a gun. Okay, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you're talking in terms of something that is microscopic, if you will. The Wolves have said, this is not about our personal business operation. This is about the team, and that's separate from our personal business operations. Now, maybe an audit will show that to be erroneous and et cetera, but it's quite clear that the Wolves are very much offended. And I repeat again, Mr. Allen, what I said earlier on this program. Anti-Semitism is at play. Now, that doesn't say that the governor is a part of it, but there are some. I would suggest that the gentleman from Target, who was quite cavalier in saying, well, we should just push the piece of paper across the table and tell them to sign it. This is being driven by some anti-Semitism, and I repeat again what I said. You got a bunch of lazy people here, particularly business types, who think that they're going to intimidate Ziggy Wolf into selling this team to Minnesota interests. Now, let me tell you a little bit of history on that, Don. Do you know that the business community has really never put up any money for the Minnesota Vikings in the last 30 years?
Wow, I didn't know that.
When Roger Hedrick was forced out, when he thought he was going to be buying the team, and the team was sold to Red McCombs, you got to understand, Red McCombs wanted out. He made what he could. He sucked it dry. He wanted to do some development in Aspen, Colorado, for his little baby girl. He wanted out. I'm gonna throw a name to you that people want to tend to forget: Richie Flowers was an African American who was put up as somebody that could buy the Minnesota Vikings. What no one seems to remember, the chief minority partner, Mr. Flowers, was Ziggy Wolf, who he had been introduced to by a man by the name of Kevin Warren, the general counsel for the Minnesota Vikings then and now in Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Because Ziggy was looking to get into the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
There was a group of Jewish owners in the NFL that kind of wanted to strengthen their presence, if you will. Now, I take you back to Max Winters. There's always been a bad taste in the mouths of many of the Jewish owners in the NFL about what happened to Max Winters here over 20 years ago when he lost, quote-unquote, the Vikings behind Mr. Lynn and a group of so-called business owners, if you will. Okay? Now, some of that has been, much of that has been written. For anybody that wants to challenge it, go back and take a look at stories in the Minneapolis Star Tribune in the 1980s. Okay?
Wow.
Take a look at the history of Max Winters and the man that brought professional football to this city and how he was treated in his later years, he and Ben Berger. Okay?
Okay.
And I know a lot of the Jewish community don't want to talk about it because they want to keep, you know, a low profile and et cetera. But there are a lot of owners, Jewish in the NFL, who never forgot what happened to Max Winters. Okay?
Okay.
Now, when Ziggy Wolf said he was prepared to come in and buy the franchise, a number of WASPs, if you will, made an immediate appeal to find somebody to buy the franchise. They went to who? They went to Glenn Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
But Glenn Taylor is a shrewd businessman. He didn't become a billionaire twice over because he's an idiot. Glenn Taylor said, look, I got the Timberwolves. I'm pretty well invested there. You know, I need to do some things with the Target Stadium. I like to get it improved and et cetera. I just don't think I have the interest to go into a second venture, okay? And so then in came Ziggy Wolf. Because Red McCombs was saying, I need somebody to take this team, because Red McCombs had lost half of his wealth, as unfortunately Ziggy Wolf did in 2008 when the market went belly up.
Mm-hmm.
Red McCombs had a problem with his Clear Channel empire and his automobile empire. He had lost a significant piece of money. He decided it was time to get out. Okay.
Wow.
Now, in the case of Red McCombs, for those that say they're historians, Red McCombs didn't have enough money to initially buy the Vikings. The NFL loaned him $100 million.
Okay.
And that's when the franchise was pretty cheap. Okay. That's what it was pretty cheap. Okay. Ziggy Wolf became the darling of the white media in this town because, God forbid, if this black boy was able to come up with some money to actually become the majority owner. Now, by the way, the good brother is a 5% minority owner of the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
No one ever talks about that.
Never.
Yeah. Brother Flowers is a 5% owner, and that was the way the deal was cut.
mm-hmm.
because he knew he didn't have the money. He was a front man. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
So these are some of the things that are out there, and our papers and et cetera are just not being transparent. But what happened was there was a rush to judgment, Mr. Allen. When Roger Goodell came in here and told the governor and others that the Vikings were free to leave, we talked about that on these programs and in our columns. When the Vikings in 2011 did not sign a renewed list lease with the, at that time, stadium authority, that was a signal that they were prepared to go if they didn't get a new stadium. Well, Roger Goodell came here almost a year later and said, look, the Vikings are free to leave, because some of these idiots thought that they were going to be able to pressure the NFL to block Ziggy from leaving.
Hmm.
The man's no fool, man. I mean, the man's done fought out a case for 21 years, okay?
Yeah.
Phone lines are open. If anybody's got this, it's interesting to see what people's thinking is on this.
Yeah,
they got a problem.
Yeah, they do. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. So, Mr. Edwards, what does this mean for the Star and Tribune's sale of their parking lots and businesses and buildings over in that area less than a couple blocks from the Dome? If this
the Star Tribune is in big trouble, Mr. Allen, because they were looking to pick up $75 million to $100 million. They already had been looking for space for their operation. Okay, they had been posting ads in some of the commercial papers, if you will. They were already looking. They were looking to sell that. Here's the problem that they've had. Venture LLC, who mm-hmm. owns a couple of prime pieces of land, they're a parking, quote-unquote, parking company. They just told the Vikings Monday that the Vikings will not be, after the 31st of October, the Vikings will not be able to use the plaza for the final four home games of this quote-unquote stellar arena, or in this case, stadium,
mm-hmm.
because Venture LLC owns the land, and they own the land above, and they also technically own the air rights. So they told the Vikings and the Sports Facility Authority, who's been acting real ugly and started talking about eminent domain and taking their land and et cetera, they said, well, I tell you what, first of all, we're going into court, and so we're going to fight this out. But in the meanwhile, because of the way you treated us, okay, you're treating us like we're colored people, okay? So what we're going to do is that on October 31st, you're not going to be able to have any Viking activity on the plaza.
Oh, wow, that's going to be terrible.
That also creates a problem for Ryan and the big sweet package they had put together, because as we've talked about in the production meetings, the person who got pushed out and was lied to about the plaza, Ziggy Wolf. Ziggy Wolf was told that he would get a piece of the action. We've been saying it for over a year. He was to get a 4-star hotel within 200 yards of the front door of the stadium and a 200-unit condo, right? When they cut the deal with Wells Fargo and Ryan Construction, they cut Ziggy Wolf right out of the deal. Now, I said to our listeners at the top of this program, you know, anywhere you go in American sports, baseball, 3 strikes and you're out, right? This is the third time they've stuck it to Ziggy. They stuck it to him in Anoka. For those that pretend like they don't know what we're talking about, go get your computer, go back and take a look at Vikings and Anoka County. They did it to him in Arden Hills. Go back and take a look to the stories on that. And now they're doing it to him on the stadium. The guy is angry. He's in some respects, rightly so, man. Rightly
so. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And so he is in a position, I'll say it to you like this, Don, he is in a position, and my friends in the legislature and others know, he is in a position, the Vikings are in a position to walk as early as mid-October.
Wow.
Because there's a clause in the legislation that indicates that the construction trust fund must have $100 million there. So that they can move ahead with the construction, okay? Senator Hayden and others who are out there know that from once we speak, we are telling the absolute truth. And if anyone wants to challenge us, next week what we'll do, we'll just read the language from the legislation over the air.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mid-October is a crucial. There are 3 or 4 crucial drop-dead dates. Okay? That's how serious this situation is. And for that caller that called in previously, I hope that this helps him understand some of the things that, and I appreciate what he said, that we've been saying here for a long time, and certainly I've been saying in our columns in the largest black newspaper in the state of Minnesota, the Spokesman Recorder, for over a year and a half. I mean, this is a crisis, Mr. Allen. They can poo-poo this all they want, man. If they can't get the Vikings back to the table by mid-September, which is only a couple weeks off, they've got a serious crisis.
Yeah, their dominoes are falling right down for them because it's a short. Yeah, I'm just looking at this. I'm amazed by this back and forth. These two memos, Mr. Edwards, that was sent out. You know, one at 11 a.m. to cover their butts, and the other one by the law firm, which was, like you said, disingenuous. And and they're not. And the Star Tribune is definitely not telling the truth. Neither is any of the TV stations.
No.
I mean, you just peeled out enough history, you know, for the listeners here and for the local audience that, you know, they didn't know, and I didn't know some of it. So it's just shocking because the battle is on. Let's see who wins. And I'm kind of sitting in the corner of the Vikings and Mr. Will.
Absolutely. I mean, the truth is what it is. The truth is the truth. You have to deal. Everybody keeps talking about transparency and et cetera. In the meanwhile, I feel so bad for our community because many of our persons of color have had misrepresentations made to them. They keep talking about construction. There can be no construction in that stadium until the demolition is cleared, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They can't even begin to start tearing the stadium down and working on the area until the first day of January of next year. The Vikings play their last home game on the 29th day of December, okay? As I look at the schedule, and I think it's the Lions, okay? And people have been telling people in our communities that they're going to be working and they're going to be making $30 and $40 an hour. Man, the Sports Facility Authority a couple of weeks ago told some of our leaders that your people better be able to come in here and hit the ground running, because if they are not trained and qualified, they will not be allowed to work.
Yeah,
you and I have talked about it in the production meeting.
Yeah.
This is a very, very delicate and technically challenging stadium that we're talking about. Well, they're talking about building.
Yeah, but the challenges here, Mr. Edwards, is like I don't understand, you know, and I'm pretty pissed because why do they have to put some money aside? And this is a conservative person coming out of me again. Why do they have to put some money aside for some blacks and some Hispanics and some Asians to work on a stadium when they have federal regulations that say if you are qualified, you can bid just like the Caucasian man can on this job?
The problem is the research has been done. If you've noticed, the state's human rights director, Mr. Lindsay, has been extremely quiet. Alex Tittle has gotten real quiet. We don't have the qualified people to work on this kind of stadium. Now, they maybe can work on the Saints ballpark in downtown St. Paul. They maybe could work on a high school stadium. When you start talking about working on an edifice of this magnitude, size, and complexity, I got to tell you, bro, there are a lot of white construction workers that are not going to be able to work on this stadium based on their skills or lack of.
So the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority is having the People's Stadium Welfare Plan, basically, for so we got this welfare plan that we can get the National Association of Minority Contractors and some money, and y'all can do little jobs here and there. We can get some black laborers out here. And
let me just say, talking about the minority they can't even tell the general public who it was that allegedly won the remodeling of their home at the picnic last Saturday.
Mm.
I know people on many of the websites, the social websites, have been asking Robert Woods and them for the last 5 days who won the prize to have their house totally remodeled by the minority contractors.
No one knows.
I'd just like to know who was the lucky person.
And we have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get it. Let's get it. Let's get it.
You're live on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Mr. Edwards, I would like to congratulate you on your award achievement. It was so richly deserved. So richly deserved. And about the stadium deal here, I mean, is there anything else to be expected other than the shenanigans that's going on right now? You know what I mean?
I don't think
that anyone should be a bit surprised, especially, you know, when you look at when I first seen that there's, if any, minority ownership. I think there's one minority partner with the Wilfs in this whole deal of this ownership. And then there's no minority contracting being done in the restoration of this stadium. So I don't understand how there is no outrage other than here with us that there's no minority involvement at all. And, again, they'll just call me a silly Democrat that's looking for trouble. But where's the minorities that should be involved in this thing? And that's probably why there's so much shenanigans going on, because you need one of us to get things
done. Yeah.
All right.
All
right. Appreciate it, sir. Good. Doggone. I'll say it like this. Doggone good point. By the way, let me just correct one thing, because, you know, they always maintain us black people are not for detail. There's no relationship or joint venture with the Wilfs. The Wilfs are merely the owner. The pressure is on Mortensen, who is the contracting manager. And their prime partner is, of course, Thor. Construction, which has been a shaft carrier for them since they worked on the Legacy Village and some of the rest of the stuff. And Holman, used to be called Holman, named after a very courageous black woman. Jackie Cherry Holmes changed the name.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's still Holman in my mind. But the Vikings do not have that kind of relationship. It's Mortensen. And consequently, by law, it's the sports facilities authority. That's why Alex Tittle got hired.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We're running out of time. Appreciate your call, sir.
Yep. Thank you. Okay. He
All
is
right.
clear. Yes.
I tell you, I just don't know. The caller makes an interesting point. I mean, really, why should we be surprised?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think we are, but at some point, you know, you the people have a right to know.
Yeah, that's the most important thing, and I'm looking at the two computer screens here in the studio, and I was just searching for any of the details, Mr. Edwards, that you just laid out,
mm-hmm.
and that current, like within the last 90 days, and I just did a little online scrub. I can't find anything, or nothing, you know, not even from the emails I got from Jennifer Hathaway at the MSFA or. I'm looking at like 20 emails right here and the attachments, and there is nothing what you factually stated about what's going on with this stadium. And they're not being given full disclosure or due diligence to the people of Minnesota, and they need to come clean about who has money in and who doesn't have money in. I would like to see that.
That's absolutely correct. I repeat again, we're almost out of time.
Yes.
This time last year, there was $74 million in the pot. 50 put there by the Vikings, 24 transferred from the old baseball authority. That used to be under Steve Kramer and a couple former city council people. Says that was for the sham. Oh, by the way, yesterday at the Sports Facilities Authority, a white resident came in and accused Ted Mondale. Mr. Allen and I, by the way, have a real personal understanding about this, accused Mr. Allen, Ted Mondale, of falsifying information on Target Field. Yeah, that's on the record, and it's on camera. That happened yesterday morning at the sports facility meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That the Target Field and the numbers and et cetera for participation contract was all a sham.
Wow.
So anyway, we're look like we're down to the end. We've done our due diligence.
Yes.
Oops.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. We've done a good job. We'd like to thank everybody listening today to the Ron and Don Show. We'll be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. And thank you, Mr. Edwards, and congratulations.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Some say it's a lot of nerves, but I say we want to quit moving until we get what